welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip. I'm Jeff Pedro in with Mark Avery, and we're from Sim Trainer. And I promise today's show is going to be information-packed, and I'm sure that's going to provoke quite a bit of response on the part of our listeners, because if you've been paying attention to the news, even in a passive, casual way this past week, you'll see there's lots of related items we need to talk about, and I want to get right out to it and talk, first of all, about an incident that was first raised during some controversy emails that have been distributed by USCCA concerning the Philadelphia incident, whereby a citizen.
Well, before we let Jeff go into the rant, which it's going to be a good one, you would definitely want to stay tuned for it. Let me give out the phone number for folks who want to call into the show. Our phone number here at the studio is 457-1290. So just kind of program that into your phone and get ready to punch the send button, because when Jeff is finished, I'm sure you're going to want to participate. 457-1290 is the number here at the studio.
Well, Mark and I have engaged in some pretty heated debate over this topic in the past week. In this particular incident, a citizen in the city, a law-abiding citizen from the city of Philadelphia, decided on this particular day to exercise his constitutional and his legal right to carry openly a firearm in downtown Philadelphia. He made this decision, in his own words, just to exercise his rights. But anybody that had followed the story, I think it's very clear to see that his actions, if not outright intentionally intended to get the desired result, at least in a very direct way, were designed to get the result that he ended up getting. And what he did was he started carrying his gun, walking through the streets, and he drew the attention of a Philadelphia police sergeant in downtown Philadelphia. Now, the facts are not clear yet as to whether or not the police were called to the scene or the sergeant actually rolled up on this guy, but nonetheless, a police sergeant got view of the subject's gun and immediately confronted him and told him to get down on his knees, keep his hands where he can see them, and he was going to conduct what any law enforcement officer would do in a situation, an investigation as to why an individual is walking around downtown Philadelphia with a gun. Now, let me premise this by saying that police officers, by nature of the job that they have, they don't always make what some people would say to be the right decision, and the courts have recognized that, quite frankly, they don't have to. They just have to make what's reasonable for the circumstances. Now, picture this. Downtown Philadelphia, this officer, who I think was 10-plus years experience on the force, he probably, except for fellow officers and maybe some of the escort service security companies that are taking money back and forth to the financial institution, has probably in his career, other than criminals that he might have taken guns for, never seen a person walking down downtown or around downtown Philadelphia with a gun on his hip.
And I would add that the criminals they took guns from probably didn't have it on their hip either. It was hidden. It was concealed someplace. It was stuck in a pocket in a jacket or whatever. So, yeah, you're probably the only time he's seen a licensed or a person with a handgun is either somebody in a uniform or that's it.
That's it. That's really it. So he goes ahead. He draws his gun. He orders the guy down to his knees and keep his hands where he can see them. And unfortunately, unlike what we have told our listeners all along, this individual decides not to comply but to contest the officer's allegations. I'm a lawful citizen. I'm carrying open. I'm allowed to do this. The officer basically says, in some pretty choice words, I really don't care what you're doing. Get down on your knees. Put your hands out where I can see them. And essentially giving the message, we'll talk about this later, but I'm going to secure the scene before we worry about why you have it and under what circumstances. One error the officer made right up front, and it's unfortunate, but it's a reality the way things are. He was unaware that in the state of Pennsylvania, citizens are allowed to carry open, just as in the state of Ohio. The same kinds of issues are raised, though. But in this particular incident, the officer, I personally, as a law enforcement officer, think that if the citizen would have complied at this point, it would have gone no further. But he didn't. Instead, he continued to argue and contest the officer's commands, and it took several minutes and multiple officers arriving on the scene to convince this guy to ultimately comply. He was then taken into temporary custody. His gun was taken from him, and they sorted through the facts of the situation until another supervisor arrived on the scene. They made the determination that he was actually exercising his lawful authority, and he was not physically arrested. Instead, he was unhandcuffed and permitted, after about 45 minutes to an hour, to leave the scene and leave. Now, the other factor here that I think is relevant is during this situation, the citizen had an audio recorder playing. And then after this incident occurred, several days later, all of a sudden on YouTube and on the internet, recordings and blogs start showing up of this encounter with some pretty negative comments about how the police handled it. And I don't really want to get into some of the ancillary issues about some of the language that was used by the officers, but instead I want to focus on the actions of the initial officers and the responding officers and the citizens' actions. In this particular case, as Mark and I have told you many times, the state of Ohio makes it a little bit easier for us because they require by law that if you have an encounter, if you're a concealed holder licensee, if you have an encounter with law enforcement, you are obligated by law to comply with their directives. So it makes it a little bit clearer in the state of Ohio. But even absent that provision in Pennsylvania, common sense says when police officers point a gun at you and tell you to do something, you should probably do it. And you should not argue with them as to what their motive is. And if you want to make an argument, it'll be after the fact, after the situation's calmed down, under control, and everything is sorted out. But certainly, I believe in this case, instead of it going 45 minutes to an hour, if he'd have complied in the beginning, it would have probably gone on 10 minutes. The same result might have happened. They still might have confiscated his gun, put it in the property room, and then told him to come and get it later on after they had a chance to sort it out. But it didn't go that way, and it unfortunately became a news article that was used, in my opinion, but I think it's substantiated by the facts, inappropriately by a variety of sources over the internet over the last week. Mark, you want to chime in on?
Well, yeah, a little bit, because I understand a little bit about the philosophy that says we have a right to keep and bear arms, and there is no reason why we should have to conceal the handgun from a legal perspective. Now, from a tactical perspective, I am completely of the view that if you carry concealed, you have an advantage over someone who carries openly in certain types of situations. There have also been examples of people who have carried openly, and that has deterred or delayed something bad from happening. So there's not a single answer to that question, and it's something that each person has to decide for themselves. In this case, the guy has a license to carry a firearm, which is what they call the license in Pennsylvania, an LCTF. If you have a license to carry a firearm, it doesn't say concealed license. It specifically addresses carrying a firearm. And if you have one, it's your choice as to whether you want to carry openly or carry concealed. Now, this particular officer wasn't aware of that, and that's unfortunate, and that is kind of what precipitated the whole thing. And frankly, I'm sure this guy did what he did specifically because he knew that there were people who were scared of seeing a gun in the open, and he wanted to raise that question, get the answer out in the open, and let people begin to realize that not only bad guys carry guns. I understand that. There's an open carry community in Ohio that stands up to the same thing. They say, you know, I have a right to carry openly. I have a right under the Ohio Constitution, under the U.S. Constitution, and there's no reason why I should be forced to carry concealed simply because other people are scared by that. And you know, there is some logic to that. There's something that says, you know, if we constantly hide the fact that we carry firearms, then we will never fix the problem of people being scared of what they don't know. They don't realize how many people out there do carry firearms. And the problem with that is we will never resolve that issue. We will never educate the people who are scared for no reason, no apparent reason, or no logical reason. If it's a purely emotional reason, you know, I understand emotions. I'm not going to tell people what they should feel, but it doesn't necessarily mean that what you feel is true. It's a matter of people not understanding the whole point of why anybody would carry a firearm for personal defense. What is the risk? They choose to believe that if they do nice things to other people will always do nice things to them, and the facts simply don't bear that out. So I do understand why somebody would want to push that envelope a little bit and try to get that word out. On the other hand, the way this particular guy chose to do it was a lot more in your face than is necessary, and he's obviously, because he is now soliciting funds for a legal defense or for a civil court case against the Philadelphia Police Department, I suspect that's not going to go anywhere. And frankly, I hope it doesn't go anywhere, because there were no criminal charges, at least there haven't been, and the none specifically related to the carrying of a firearm. He wasn't charged with illegally carrying a firearm openly or anything like that, which would have been a false charge. He has been charged with some disorderly conduct, and frankly, some of his conduct was probably disorderly. I'm guessing those charges will probably end up getting dropped. And then he may try to file some sort of a civil action, and frankly, I doubt seriously that that's going to go anywhere either, and it shouldn't. We do need to get the word out. We need to educate the law enforcement. I think in a situation like this, it really behooves law enforcement to not only know the law, but to behave even more circumspectly, because there are a lot of people out there that are trying to make attention for themselves, and the best way to stop that from happening is for them to be treated as responsible citizens when they are in a situation where they're carrying a firearm and they're not doing anything illegal.
Well, I think another issue that just needs to be mentioned here is that we've made some substantial progress over the last 7 years, in particular in the state of Ohio, and that's where I'm going to kind of redirect a lot of my focus. And nationwide, we're making little steps, but we're making progress. Many of the states, it's not even an issue, so there doesn't need to be progress made. But nonetheless, in Ohio, we've made substantial progress with this whole concept of concealed carry and educating people about guns. And unfortunately, incidents like this cast a dark cloud over the progress we're making, and it distracts people's focus from what they really need to be paying attention to. And I'm not going to go into it right now, but right now there's some additional proposed legislation in the state of Ohio that will help us advance our own situation in Ohio, but it'll play second fiddle to incidents like this if incidents like this get too much attention and people focus their energy too much on what would happen here. And there have been cases here in Ohio where similar situations have occurred with relatively similar outcomes, and all it does is it just gives us a black eye. It's unfortunate, and we're making great progress, and I just want the listeners out there to know that we got to engage in more productive means to continue to advance our cause and our purpose. Things are going very well right now. I think they're going to continue to. I just don't want you to get sidetracked, because I know these internet blogs go viral. They get distributed, and Mark will tell you, we get, when things like this happen, other incidents, we get 10, 15, 20 blogs within a couple days or replies on our email about what's going on. I heard about this. I heard they're passing this law. I heard they're going to restrict us. And it's all fallacy. It was just based on impulsive reaction, people reading only parts of articles, taking email that somebody sent to them as truth without checking the truthfulness of it. And that's what we want to stand for. We want to give you the opportunity to at least let us find out the truth about some of these issues.
We're going to need to take our first break for this hour. And so if you would like to get into the melee and put your comments in on it as well, give us a call at 457-1290. When we come back, we'll also talk to Brock in Piqua, who has a question for us, and we'll take your calls as well. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip. If you'd like to be on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. That's the number into the studio. If you're outside the Dayton listening area, catching us online at newstalkradio.whio.com, then you can also call 293-3914 is our number at the range if you have a question that you'd like to get answered off the air or would like to register for any classes or find out more about what's going on at Sim Trainer. Let's go out to the phones and talk to Brock in Piqua real quickly. Brock, welcome to the show.
Howdy, how y'all doing?
We're doing fine. What can we help you with?
Yeah, I am a concealed carry holder. I have a concealed carry license. And I'm a local delivery driver, and I drive a commercial vehicle. It's a commercial pickup truck, just a small little S10 pickup. And my boss is fine with me conceal and carry, but is it illegal for me to be in a commercial vehicle with a conceal and carry?
No, not at all. There have been a lot of stories about that. There have been a lot of people that say that there are federal regulations that prohibit carry in a commercial vehicle, but it's simply not the case. There are some commercial companies that will prohibit carry in their own property or in their vehicles. But if your boss, the owner of the truck, says it's okay, and as long as you're going to places where you can carry, there's not a problem. So if you were to, as long as you're not delivering to a school or to a mental health facility or something like that, then you're okay.
All right, I appreciate it. I just wanted to get that answered.
Okay, great. Thanks for calling the show. Let's go out and talk to Bob Wolf. Bob Wolf is the host of There Is a Season show that normally comes up right after us. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Mark. How are you?
Hey, we're doing great.
Appreciate you having
me on. Tell us a little bit about where you are.
Well, I'm in Washington, D.C. today with Honor Flight Dayton. Honor Flight Dayton is one of the 36 hubs of Honor Flight USA, which started in Springfield in 2005. They have flown about 3,000 veterans from the Dayton area and 65,000 veterans nationally to Washington to come down to see some of the war memorials here and to meet old friends and really get a chance to experience the gratitude of a nation here in our nation's capital. Gloria Shanahan and I came down here as guests and guardians of Honor Flight. We have 28 World War II veterans today and about 5 Korean veterans who are taking part in that.
That's a really great program. It's an opportunity, I think, for a nation to tell its soldiers, as they are very often, in fact, most of these guys are reaching very much the end of their lives. Many of them would not be able to go on their own. And in fact, the late time at which the World War II memorial was created, a lot of these guys were too old to travel on their own. And so the Honor Flight has picked up that and helped these guys to get out there, and ladies, too, to get out to see these.
We have some people here who are 94 years old, 87 years old, as you say. I mean, we have some folks here with some seriously frail health, but they are troopers here to the end, and they are coming out. The thing I pick up about all of this, in addition to, you know, the grandeur of coming down to see the nation's capital and how exciting that is as we pack all this into 22 hours, is the enormous care that Honor Flight puts into each and every veteran, and the appreciation that you see in the airports and at these monuments all over Washington. People are coming up constantly and thanking people, complete strangers, thanking these veterans for their service. And it is a time for many of these gentlemen 60, 70 years after they served to get an enormous amount of recognition. For some, it's a certain amount of closure. In many ways, a lot of these veterans open up after an opportunity like this in a way that they haven't even with their families for all these years.
And some of these stories are going to get lost, and we need to capture them. And it's really great that that this opportunity is out there for folks to maybe decompress just a little bit and see that even though they went through virtual hell, I mean, the war is hell, and the wars of that era were even worse than the ones we have now. It's terrible no matter what, but the things that they went through, I think people don't even begin to realize some of the way that they've suffered silently for decades.
Yeah, and a lot of these folks, I mean, remember, they came out as 19, 20, 21-year-old. They went out with an enormous sense of duty to America, putting their lives on hold, putting marriages and families and a lot of that on hold. In some cases, obviously, they left wives, they left children. But to come over here, go overseas to do the work of the United States government, what they were asked to do, it's really an incredible thing to be up close to it. You hear stories, you hear little anecdotal things that they can talk about now as if it's commonplace, but it is remarkable to be next to a lot of these gentlemen who are real heroes.
Bob, we've got to go because we're at a hard break, but thanks very much for calling in. I'm sure you'll have a lot more information for folks next week.
I'll check in again in about an hour. Thank you, Mark.
This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip, going over to the News Center with Bill Scheidel on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. I want to remind you, if you'd like to get on the show today, give us a call at 457-1290. If you have any issues that you'd like to resolve, reference to selecting a gun, getting some training, give us a call down at the range at 937-293-3914. We'd be glad to talk with you and help you select a gun, see what kind of training is relevant to you. I also want to remind our listeners that if you just happen to watch the news, a couple of incidents, acts of self-defense in the news this past week kind of encourage people out there who are kind of sitting on the fence to pull the proverbial trigger and get out there and take your concealed carry class and get yourself in a position where if situation warrants it, you are able to defend yourself out in public. The one incident I just want to reference real quickly is if you watched on the news in the middle of the week, there was an individual who was pumping gas late at night in the east side of Dayton at a gas station, and a thug came up to him and kind of came on to him, said he wanted a ride, and the subject, the law-abiding citizen, didn't want to give him a ride, as most of us wouldn't. And a verbal, then a physical altercation ensued. And at the time the physical altercation ensued, a second assailant came in, and they were basically double-teaming the citizen. The citizen feared for his life, and he pulled his lawfully carried, concealed carry weapon and shot one of the subject in the stomach, and the other bad guy ran off, and the law-abiding citizen drove a short way away and called the police, and the police responded. They conducted an investigation, made all the proper determinations based on the facts as they were presented. They saw the videotape, and we've got two suspects in jail, and we've got a law-abiding citizen who's alive to tell his story, and yeah, he's a hero. And obviously, it's just kind of another example of those of you who are out there thinking about it. You just don't know where you're going to be. I know there's a couple people that say, well, why is he out that late at night anyway? Well, who knows what the circumstances? Maybe he works midnight shift. Maybe he, you know, he has kids and he had to go out and get something at the store. Lawfully being in places at hours that aren't necessarily real desirable shouldn't be the issue. He shouldn't be subjected to assault, and he certainly shouldn't have to take it if assault comes his way. And in this particular case, bad guys picked the wrong person at the wrong time. Good outcome. And here, the other thing I just wanted to mention about that particular issue, I've been following the news, and other than the initial reporting of that incident, there hasn't been a whole lot of news coverage, and shame on the news people for not following up on that incident, because that should be smeared all over the paper for a couple days.
Well, and in fact, one of the things that has been identified is that he didn't have the gun on his person. He had it in the vehicle, and so he got into the vehicle and got that gun. We do actually have somebody calling in with a question about guns and vehicles, so let's just bring that up. Cody, welcome to the show. This is Shooting from the Hip. Welcome. And how can we help you?
Hi, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Love your show.
Thanks very much.
My question is, I have my concealed carry license, and when I get in my vehicle, let's say it's a kind of a chilly day, normally I'll carry a full-size 1911 on my hip. When I get in my vehicle, if let's say I take my jacket off, if I get a little warm, is that still legal, like my firearm still being out in the open, but it's on my hip?
You're talking about like in a holster on your person?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, that's perfectly legal. You lose the advantage of concealment in terms of the tactical advantage of doing that.
Yes.
And you may end up, you know, scaring somebody who sees it on your hip inside your vehicle as they, you know, drive by or stop at a stoplight or something. So it's not a bad idea to conceal it anyway, but you're not violating any laws as a result. In fact, initially when the law was passed in Ohio, you had to carry it openly in your vehicle. And that changed in March of 2007, so you no longer are required to, but there's no restriction that keeps you from doing it. You do need a license to carry a concealed handgun to carry a firearm openly and loaded in a motor vehicle, though. So even though it's a concealed handgun license, it also allows you to carry in your vehicle a loaded gun, and whether it's concealed or open is up to you.
Okay, very good. And one more question, if I may, if you guys have the time.
Sure, go ahead, quick.
How's the deal coming on Senate Bill 239?
Which is Senate Bill 239? Is that the complete restoration of all rights and get rid of the Ohio license and that sort of thing?
I believe it's the one with firearms and like Class D liquor establishment.
Oh, okay. That would be Senate Bill 17, and that passed last week. We spent a whole hour talking about how that went, and there's more about that. One of the things that we didn't get to talk about was the provision for guns in motor vehicles, which is also changed by that law. Senate Bill 17 made it completely through both the House and the Senate, and has been sent on to the governor. To the best of my knowledge, it hasn't been signed yet, but that is probably going to happen in a ceremony, I'm guessing, next week, since it didn't happen this week.
I actually missed that show. So.
Okay, well, you'll definitely want to catch it on our website or on our podcast at sim-trainer.com/radio, because I put that site out there, and we definitely stirred the pudding. We had a lot of interesting discussion about that last week. Cody, okay. Thanks very much for calling the show. Let's go out to back out to the phones and talk to Justin in Lewisburg, who has a comment for us. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. My question is concerning the gentleman out in Philadelphia.
Sure.
The way it sounded, you made a comment that he was being inflammatory by provoking this response from the police by exercising his constitutional right.
No, that's not exactly what we meant. It was his way of dealing with the police once the situation had started. In my opinion, you know, he could have handled better.
Okay, and I absolutely agree with you there. I do not blame the police for his response at all. But it seems to me like we've gotten into a culture where we have to ask permission for that you know, for that right to exercise our constitutional rights, just like open carry. We've always been told that ignorance is no excuse. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. And this man was almost, I just see him exercising his open carry right. It seems like we've gotten into a culture that we've gotten so far behind on our constitutional rights that we have to ask permission for everything we do, and we're automatically looked at negatively when the police don't know the law.
Well, unfortunately, you've mentioned a number of issues that could each and of themselves require a whole show of commentary, but I just want to address one in particular. When you're talking about losing rights for about, Mark and I have talked about this many times, 40 years from maybe the mid to late 60s on into the early 2000s, we didn't really lose our Second Amendment right in particular. We just kind of took it for granted, and we didn't do anything to preserve it. We didn't promote it. We allowed it to, the concept of urbanization kind of brought with it the movement into the inner city, and then, of course, there were no more government restrictions because people were living closer and closer together and a lot of other issues, and we just let it wane. And in addition to that, we let the anti-gunners impose their rhetoric, and that's all they really have, impose their rhetoric on issues, and they kind of made people believe that that was the way things should be, that there should not be guns in society, when in fact, prior to the 60s, there was really never any issue.
Well, it's more than just rhetoric, because they did get laws passed that made some pretty serious infringements on our right to keep and bear arms.
But much of it based on rhetoric as opposed to fact.
Absolutely. It was all based on emotion and rhetoric and very little fact. In fact, almost no fact. The argument was crime control, and it has done nothing to reduce crime. And in fact, in those places that have the most strict gun control laws, they have the highest crime. How about that? Washington, D.C.
And New York City.
New York City and Detroit and L.A.
And this is a big reason why I was actually glad to hear what the man was doing. And I got the impression that you guys were, when you made a comment that we were making a lot of progress, but you almost made it sound like we have to tiptoe into getting back to our rights.
That's
what really bothered me, because 100 years ago, a man could walk into a hardware store with a .45 on his hip. Nobody thought a thing about it. Hell, you could buy them in barrels at the end of the counter.
But there again, times have changed, and I do think we don't necessarily have to tiptoe, but we have to use our head and do it cautiously with rightful intentions, as opposed to, in this case, an in-your-face example that was totally based on trying to draw attention in a negative way to the right to carry a gun openly. I don't question it at all. As a law enforcement officer, believe me, I see it on both sides. I'm a pro-gun advocate on the one side and a law enforcement officer that recognizes the serious, the rapidly evolving, highly stressful, tense, and ever-changing situations that police face every day, and there's no way to make definitive decisions when they just happen to see somebody walking down the street with a gun readily exposed, what his intentions are. Is he just trying to exercise his Second Amendment right, or did he have a squabble where he's now going to go and try to resolve that incident, or is he going to go rob the local pharmacy? Whatever the case might be, law enforcement needs to have the authority to engage in safe interchange. And in that particular example, just as it's happened here in this local Dayton area over the last several years, where police have been called to scenes where people carried guns openly in their cars, the police stopped the car, found out the guy was carrying it legally like he was supposed to back before the law changed, and they let him go on his way. There was no unreasonable intrusion into his liberty. It was just that somebody saw it. They called the police. The police are obligated to react, as the police officer in Philadelphia was obligated to react, because it is not commonplace. And I think even you would have to agree, whatever jurisdiction you live in, it's not usual. As a matter of fact, it's extremely rare where you see someone walking down the street with a gun exposed.
That's not in uniform,
that
please.
That's where I guess I've got my issue. I mean, the man, I agree, it's not usual, and that's my concern with that is that it has become so uncommon just because everybody fears guns so much that the man was trying to make a statement. Of course he was being in your face.
Well, but there's a way. You can make a statement. You can make the point without being in your face. You don't have to be rude. You don't have to be obnoxious, and he was. And if you listen to the full audio track, he was pretty much in your face. He knew he was right on the law, but there's a difference between being right and being in your face about, I'm right and you're wrong, copper. And he didn't use that word, but that was the attitude that he used. And there's just no place for that, because that the police have a tough job to do, and particularly in downtown Philadelphia, it's a real tough job to do. So this guy's walking down there, and he was stopped by the police. He should have very politely and dealt with the situation, but he chose not to do it that way. My criticism is not with the fact that we need to get the word out. And my my criticism is in his particular way that he chose to deal with that and his objective for, you know, the way he handled that situation. I think it was something that needs work. We're not going to fix this problem overnight, but we are going to fix it if we keep working on it. Justin, thanks very much for calling the show. We need to take our last break of the hour. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to this last segment of the show, but before we go right back out to the phones, I just wanted to thank Justin, our last caller, for calling in and engaging in that kind of dialogue in this target-rich forum, which will, that along with the well-thought-out, multifaceted, and holistic approach to the problem is going to obviously yield much more favorable results, both in the form of personal attitudes of the citizenry and in legislation from our people in Columbus that's going to make obviously much better decisions related to pro-gun issues for us. So I just wanted to thank him for that call and encourage our listeners to feel free to give us a call and engage. We're not always going to agree, but this is the forum to provide that information so everybody has a chance to get educated on all the issues.
And there are some things pending in Columbus that I think are going to make some great changes, and we'll talk more about that next week, but we still have folks on the phone, so let's go talk to Phil in Tip City who has a question for us. Phil, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
How can we help you?
Well, what I'm calling about is that I'm a person that does not have a concealable carry permit.
Okay.
But I'd like to go hunting or target shooting.
Okay.
I'd like to find out what the rules are for transporting my guns and ammunition.
Okay.
An automobile.
All right, not a problem. We can do that. There are four ways that you can transport a firearm legally unloaded in your automobile. It can be in a compartment that cannot be reached from inside the vehicle. In most cars, that doesn't mean the trunk anymore because you can get into the trunk. So if you had a truck or you had some other vehicle or if you had an old car that you couldn't get into the trunk from inside, then that one might work. So that one's probably not going to be on the list for most people. You can have it in a case that closes with a zip snapper lid or buckle. That could even be a box, but just as long as it's closed, it does not need to be locked. It does need to be unloaded, and the definition of unloaded means that there's no ammunition in the gun and there's no ammunition in any magazines or speed loaders that can be used with that gun. So you can have all of it in a range bag. You can have the ammunition in the same range bag. As long as your magazines are and speed loaders are unloaded and there's no ammunition in the gun, that's good to go. And then there are two other ways, and they basically apply to long guns. You can have it in a rack that's specifically made for securing the gun in that way, or if it's a long gun over 24 inches long with more than an 18-inch barrel, then it can be opened and stripped, or if it can't be stripped, then it can just be opened. So those are the four ways that you can transport a firearm in a motor vehicle unloaded without a license.
So shotgun shells could be in the same gun case with the gun?
As long as they're not in the gun, they're not in the magazine that goes, you know, the tube magazine in the gun, you're good to go.
Okay, and where can I find these rules written down?
They're in the concealed carry book. They're also in the Ohio Code, and I can put a link to it on our website after the show.
It used to be when you got a hunting license, you were given a pamphlet that had these written down.
Right.
But they don't do that anymore.
Okay. The pamphlet now is downloadable from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources website. I think they probably still cover it in there. But I'll give you links to that on our website at sim-trainer.com/radio, probably by the end of the weekend.
Would you have time for another quickie related?
Okay.
When they passed the concealable carry laws, did they overrule the old prudent man rules?
Well, they didn't overrule it, but they did get rid of the affirmative defense. In other words, you can't just argue that you were carrying a firearm for legal purposes and that even though you didn't have a license, you weren't doing anything illegal, because that argument, which is the only way you could carry a concealed handgun before, that argument went away. They took away the affirmative defense for carrying a firearm without a license.
Okay.
And in any case, even then, you couldn't do it in an automobile anyhow, because you can't have a loaded gun in an automobile.
All righty. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Thanks very much for calling the show. I hate to leave folks on the phone, but we are just flat out of time. So we are going to have to wrap this up for today. We do have an awful lot more stuff that was in our pile that we didn't even get come close to talking about this week. So be sure to tune us in next week, because we will have a lot more things to stir up the pot on. There's legislation that's pending. Hopefully there will be the law signed, the House Bill, Senate Bill 17 and House Bill 54. about the restoration of rights and car carry and restaurant carry and all the other things that come up on our show. So stay tuned with us, and we'll be back next week with a lot more information. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM News Talk Radio, WHIO.